Hi, this is Stephen Lucky and welcome to Theatre Voices. This is part two of a special coming from the Cultural Diverse Showcase Decibel 09 in Manchester. And with me, I have four exceptionally talented black stroke mixed race lads. They call themselves the Decipher Collective and open the hugely successful showcase with a bang. Their piece was called
1632.
And who said that Birmingham doesn't have talent? Because sitting right in front of me is...
RT, a.k.a. Artikel, spoken word poet, recording and performing artist and MC and all that.
Evoke, writer, performer, producer, filmmaker, scriptwriter, the lot.
LCB, the light colour brother, spoken word artist, MC, performer, fashion design, is it?
Professor D, the nutty professor, spoken word artist, producer, beat maker, and many other things.
Okay, thank you and welcome. Now, before you tell us a little bit about yourself, can you briefly explain your art form? Because you're all MCs. Now, for those who don't know, what is an MC?
An MC is a mic controller, but I wouldn't consider myself as an MC. I'm a spoken word artist. That's my main art form, but I like to venture into other art forms and other genres.
An MC, to the people of the streets, basically, an MC is a grime artist that writes lyrics to a beat, basically, and spits on the beat and records, and that's an MC artist. But as Decipher just said, we are not MCs. We've channeled our talent into different, basically, spoken word, which is taking it off the beat, taking it out of format, taking it off rhythm, and just going with it. Didn't even have to rhyme. That's the wickedest thing.
Okay, but you also do quite a lot of other things like grime and physical theatre and mime and poetry.
Yeah, of course. We basically cover the whole range of what you can do in any theatre subtext or any theatre context. We take that and merge that with all types of art. You get me? We as artists, we deal with art from the heart, and from the heart, you can express whatever you like. You know what I mean? So that's how. Yeah.
Okay. Well, briefly tell us about yourselves and how you became an MC. And let's start with you, Artie.
How did I become an MC? First of all, I'd like to say I feel like I'm still very much an MC as well in what I do. A lot of what I'd still do is, if you want to take it back to what the word actual MC is, like, I feel like I'm still involved in that. How I got involved in it really was just as a young kid listening to old reggae sounds and sound clash and stuff like that, and hearing DJs, Toaster used to call it back then. I used to kind of love that kind of thing, and then I heard a music form called grime, which was really much like, it was like the UK equivalent of what was going on in America with their hip-hop movement and I kind of got on board, and it was something that really appealed to me, and I think it represented me. And yeah, that's how I really started, and it just went from there, and I've kind of gone into lots of different avenues and art forms since then and expanded it.
I mean, one of the things that strikes me about you, because I was watching you on stage, you have an incredible presence. I mean, have you ever thought about being an actor or you know, wanting to do performance?
Well, off the back of 1632, which has been going for about, is it 3 years?
Yeah,
3 years and a bit. I've kind of gone more into the acting thing a lot more, and I've kind of... To be honest, I didn't really realise that was something that I really wanted to do. Mm. But when I got involved in it and I kind of seen different avenues and what I could do, I kind of developed a love for acting and different art forms of expressing myself. And I think there's a lot of other people out there who, I think, with me personally doing what I was doing, what I am doing, I hope that it can show other people like me that there's lots of different art forms that you can get involved in. It can be translated.
Okay, all right. Now let's just move to you, Evoke. I mean, how did you get into performance?
Well, to be honest with you, yeah, it was kind of an accident. Simply because I ended up going to a function. It was 2006 that we had
the first one.
2006, right? I hung around with a couple of MCs from the ends, I guess, and they said they were going to a function, and they invited me along, so I came along just to see what was going on. But I reached there, I can see about 40, 50 MCs in this room. Everybody's talented, everybody's got something to say, and I was just kind of like the quiet kid in the corner, You know what I mean? And I'm sitting there just listening to everyone thinking, rah, these guys are on some next thing and everyone's producing and doing music and saying stuff in this lyrical way, and which I had no concept or no idea about. I just kind of listened to, I was just kind of into hip hop at the time. Mm-hmm. But ironically, the guy that was heading the workshop, this guy called Charlie Duck, pinpointed me out at the end and said, listen, do you want to come back to the next session, which is happening in a couple of weeks? And I was like, why? He goes, well, I feel that you got something to say. You got a presence about you. And I think, you know, this could be somewhere where you could, you know, do something with this. So I was like, I was a bit skeptical at first, but then I came back and it became a reoccurring thing. And then, so I found that I've kind of got an innate talent, you know what I mean? And next thing I know, I'm on stage performing something that I didn't actually think I'd be able to do.
Okay.
And boy, it just took off from there.
All right. Thank you. That sounds fantastic. Okay, LCB.
What does that stand for?
LCB's got many different, you know, there's many different meanings to it. It's the light-coloured rubber, the little cheeky bleep, I can't even say it here.
Okay.
But really, it's my initials, but we just take it out and, you know, put a little creativity to it.
Well, may I ask, what is your real name?
My real name? The light-coloured brother. Nah, I'm only joking. My real name's Leon.
Okay, look, Leon, you started, according to some information that I was looking up, at the age of 13 as an MC. Why did you go into... What was it about MCing? Wasn't there other things that you wanted to do?
13 is like just a distinct age of what I can remember. I mean, to go even back before that, I'm talking like garage days. I mean, the thing that I can remember starting off was being on a bus in primary school, and a guy was listening to his CD player, and his head was moving kind of fast to the beat, and I'm thinking, hold on, well, I've never heard nothing that makes my head move that fast. And I had to ask him, I said, what's that? He's like, Silk City, ask your brother. And I'm like, so I went home, my brother showed me this garage CD, I'm like, raw, that's heavy. So from there, I started liking garage, and I thought, you know what, I can do this, I can hear these MCs, and I'm like, you know, I can do that. So that's where I started writing. But 13 was a distinct age because that was like my first time when I met Decipher on our back fence, and I heard him MC, and I thought, all right, let me show him what I've got. I went home, written lyrics, and that's how we started from there.
So if you started when you were 13, how old are you now?
I'm 20.
20, okay. All right, let's move on to the professor, the nutty professor, according to his bio. How did you get into performance? Go back even further. What was it, you know, like at school, etc.? Did you have a desire that you wanted to perform?
Well, you know, I come from a musical family, you get me, who was very, like, very involved in the church, you get me? So from a young age, like, my mum was a poet, my dad was a DJ, I was raised in the church, I was in the church choir, so I've always had a love for music. The first thing I was a singer, stroke poet, you know what I mean? And I kept doing poetry and kept performing in lots of different places, but I didn't really think that I got my inner voice out or what I wanted to say out. Do you know what I mean? And my voice broke as well when I was singing, so that was like, scrap that, no more singing for me. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So when the coming of garage and grime came, that's when I felt like I had something to say then, and people would listen, you get me? Mm. So I got involved, heavily got involved in grime, got involved in the beat making for Music 2000 on PlayStation, upgraded to Fruity Loops on the PC, and now I'm on Logic, you get me?
Okay.
And it was the beats that got me mixing around with different MCs. Mm. That's how I met LCB.
Okay.
That's how I met a lot of the other MCs in this whole process.
I mean, it's quite a remarkable journey in a way, because, you know, you started off as in music. I mean, I was watching you on stage, I thought, hang on, this guy's got incredible physical presence. You were doing a lot of physical movement and stuff like that, mm-hmm. Yeah? Yourself, RT, which I'm just going to move over to, I was saying to you, did you just discover that you had the actor inside of yourself?
I've never really discovered it. Like, me personally, the first bit of acting, well, it was never really acting with this because we was all playing ourselves, and the story that we really kind of put out there was a lot of things that was actually going on at the time, in an exaggerated way to make it, but a lot of the things that was going on was very current, what was there, so it was really easy to play myself in a sense because that's how I was feeling, so I was very passionate about what was going on then. But I've kind of learned to really take anything that's going on in any situation in regards to, like, my art form and stuff like that, and make it personal to myself so that I can express it in that same kind of way.
Okay. Well, this is very interesting. We've got four very different individuals, and they all came together. How?
Well, the process was through... It was started off with I can't remember. I'm forgetting names and all sorts.
So, well, basically, it started off with 40 MCs in one room. You get me? 40 MCs in one room, 40 massive egos. Everyone's MCing. Everyone's going head-to-head against each other. And then after that, those 40 MCs got cut down to about 20. And those 20 MCs got cut down to about 10, which eventually got cut down to about 5 because there was a massive competition where the ones who had to write the best piece, we got to do a massive grime theatre show at Black Soil Festival in Amsterdam. Do you know what I mean? And we were the ones that lasted. I mean, the thing I basically think about us, which sets us different from everyone, is we weren't really in the scene like everybody else was.
So you're raw.
Yeah.
We literally were from the street.
Well,
I don't mean it
Farsight,
quite like that.
We had a group called Farsight.
Basically, from before the collective even started, I mean, me, RT and Professor, we was kind of MCing anyway because obviously I started out with D and then I met RT and I thought, yo, this guy is just as sick as me and on the same thing. And we formed a thing called Partners in Crime, which I introduced D and RT. Then it was Farsight, so it's through that. And then as a little collective ourselves, that's how we entered into the, well, we've seen this workshop available and said, you know what, we're going to enter that. From there, as Decipher said, 40 MCs, whittled down to 20, and then there was a competition, basically. Whoever wrote the sickest poem, basically, got to go out to Amsterdam. And
so who wrote the sickest poem?
You're talking to them.
All right, it's all coming out now, all right. So how did you form the collective?
The collective?
You see, it's a mad situation because the collective was never, it was never a time when we said, right, we are now forming the Decipher Collective. But it was more of fate kind of pulled us together and also different circumstances and other people around us, and it kind of just worked.
So you're basically saying four different individuals from Birmingham suddenly came together and realised that actually you could share the talent and it would be probably better doing it that way because...
I mean, I think that the difference, like, as I said, man, the difference between us and a lot of the other MCs was the grime scene is a very raw scene. You're there, you come there and you do your thing, whether it's radio or whether it's a dance. But with grime theatre, it's different. You've got to be there on time. You get me? There's strict schedules, you know what I mean? And a lot of the other MCs, that wasn't really their thing. But like LCB was saying, because of the Far Side thing, we were like the MCs on the outskirts. Do you know what I mean? And we weren't necessarily in the scene. So that was a new opportunity for us to... there was a new opportunity for us to excel in a completely different environment.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Can I... And, you know, we keep saying Far Sides and we just need to explain it, basically, is that as a grime scene, there's certain names that will pop straight to their thing.
For those who don't know what grime is, what is it?
There's not... Do you know what? It's nothing from the dirt... Can I answer this question?
There's actually, until the media actually created the name grime, there was actually no such thing as grime. It was just garage. And there was an artist called Wiley who made a type of grime called Esky Beat, which then kind of started up a certain sound for garage.
Okay.
And then the media kind of went, yeah, there's lots of angry kids there. What will we call it? We'll call it grime. But it's kind of a name that really stuck. And so...
But we, as a group, we've flipped it on the head now.
Yeah.
You've got grime MCs out there.
Yeah.
If you spell grime backwards, you get the word emerge. You get me?
Okay. It's like a lyrical poetry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Set to music in the background. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like I was saying before, we flipped it backwards. The word grime backwards is emerge. And I consider myself as an emerge MC.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, I'm just going to ask Evoke, who are you reaching out to?
Who am I reaching out to?
Yeah, with this Decipher Collective.
Anybody that wants to listen, really. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, we've all got stories to tell, and everybody's got their own initial story, their own journey, their own path that they're walking down. And to be honest with you, I feel that because of our backgrounds as artists and as individual people, our stories are universal.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I mean, it wasn't... I mean, even after the show proved it itself, that there was some guys from America that came over and said, yo,
we need this
in our country, blood, because at the end of the day, we were able to relate to exactly what you were going on. And that's from a different side of the world. So at the end of the day, our experience is universal. So I'm saying anybody that needs to listen...
I mean, I'd back you up on that, man. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was a performance. It was a story. It was storytelling. It involved physical theatre. It was incredibly lyrical. There were some really interesting things that you were trying to put across.
I think, like, the beauty of this piece, 8/16/32, is that a lot of people that see grime and don't understand what it is. They make a lot of judgments and stereotypes about what it is, but our show gives the audience a chance to see grime broken down and get inside of the mind of the artist and just see a real closed caption like experience of what it is.
I mean, I was talking to Benji Reed about this, about him doing physical theatre and how it's a very lonely world when it's just the artists in a theatre on stage and you have to communicate to 300-400 people. Look at yourselves, you know, four young men performing on stage. Isn't it difficult when you don't have, for instance, like a huge backdrop and a set and lights all over the place, etc.?
I think, for me, that's what kind of makes the piece what it is. I think what we was working with, like I said before, where we had this joint vision of something that we wanted to do, we did many different versions of the play in different styles, and we kind of got to the point where we don't need any props. We didn't really need it because it was a real story and it was about what the actual characters were saying and what the actual words was about, and it was about the music. So,
and it's quite nice in a way when you put it like that, when you say what the actual characters are saying, because it does come, you draw it from your own backgrounds, from where you come from in terms of your community, and it isn't that boring middle class theatre that we're also used to. Well, that's what's so refreshing. And also what you just said, Evoke, as well, is universal. It's like, and it can appeal to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyone. I mean, I know that when we did the show, yeah, I had guys coming up to me saying, yo, I didn't realise how much I was going to enjoy the show. I only came with my son. You know what I mean? Because he knew his son was into that kind of thing. But when he came, he said he enjoyed it more than his son. I was like, whoa.
Well, I mean, I went to Birmingham, I think it was about a year ago, and I saw Charlie Dart do, as it
happened.
And it blew me away. I was just, I keep saying this, so I'll shut up and we'll move on to the next question. But it was just a really refreshing piece of work that spoke to absolutely everybody. So let's talk about your creation. What is your creation? What is this wonderful show called 8/16/32?
It's basically the trials and tribulations of an MC, you can say, because everybody's got their own, like, above, like a character paints, like an MC will paint a picture of who he is, but he won't paint the picture of what's behind that MC, basically. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, basically, like, my kind of character was, there's a guy that's stuck in a job, but he's got a wicked raw talent that he knows he can make more money off than his bloody job. And it's kind of hard because you can't get into this. It's hard because no one wants to break you through. So you've got to have this job and you've still got to do this on the side, and you're just, you know, you're trying to work the both of them, and it's hard.
I think for me, each one of the characters, though they are kind of very heavily related to what each individual person here, each one of them kind of goes into a stereotype of a certain kind of artist. So then you've got this kind of artist who thinks this way and they're in this kind of situation. So each artist for me kind of covers a vast amount of people whose experiences may vary slightly, but it kind of it's a thread that's sewing people together.
So basically what you're referring to is like different black male stereotypes.
Yeah, different. I think especially with the, because it's a grime piece as well, a lot of it, if you're not aware already, a lot of the MCs have these names like Superman or rare, you know what I'm saying, for instance, where it's this alter ego where you put forward. But I think the piece kind of shows you the alter ego and why this alter ego's there, and then when the alter ego's gone, who's there behind the alter ego.
And I think that's what I found incredibly fascinating about the work.
But on a whole, 8/16/32 for me, it's about the industry and the way the industry relates to different artists. You get me? It's about these four MCs and this big MC that's already in the industry. He's lost his phone, and all his bars are on his phone. And there's this big, massive competition for all these four MCs to get this phone, if they're going to be the best. But then when all these four MCs are trying and striving to be the best and get this phone, you just realise that really and truly, it was just a competition to just promote the phone. And the artist is completely insignificant. And that's the way the industry tried to make it out for a lot of artists. And a lot of people out there want to make it, but the industry has no interest in them. Just the porn that's there already, you know what I mean?
There were some delightful pieces that you presented at the opening piece for the Decibel. And I'm going to skip to the end because the end was so, so powerful. Does somebody want to tell us very briefly what that N was and how did you come about doing that?
Which part exactly?
It's the nightclub bit.
Well, the nightclub bit is getting the nightclub bit, right, encompasses almost what grime is. It's the epitome of grime, you know what I mean? Because it is primal, it's the jungle at the end of the day, you know what I mean? When grime music, you'll find grime music in most underground nightclubs, most the underground scene. So we needed to kind of get that and contain it into one environment and show what happens, what actually happens to people when they are in that environment, what happens when the music gets going, what happens when the energy is flowing, and what happens when, you know, people start saying what they say. You know what I mean? It's like cooking. Things are just going to bubble up.
Okay, so what happened at the end then?
Without getting too philosophical or too scientific about things, there's this thing that happens in a dance, so to say, where the atmosphere becomes so intense and everybody's on so much of the same way.
And I think it was really intoxicating. I mean, the whole room was intoxicated.
I think it even goes down to the point of, like, the African drum where people would be banging the drums, get ready for war, and then everyone would get in the spirit and you're ready. And I think what the last part of it kind of shows that crescendo of where we kind of... The energy has to go somewhere. Okay. So whether that energy ends up as a big situation occurring, like where the tune pulls up and a situation and everyone's left and it's just these people there going mad or there's a fight or something like that, but the energy has to go somewhere.
Okay, so what's your take on the end then?
The end was to get the rawness out, basically. Throughout the whole show, we're showing the way and the workings of an MC, and we never forgot because we waited till the end to show the rawness of an MC. So it's like you're in this dance now, and it could be that one thing. I mean, you can hear a certain drum pattern or a certain melody and your brain just goes elsewhere, and that's the rawness, and you just want to jump. You don't care who's looking at you, what girls around, you're going to jump up and down and you're going to have fun. That's the main thing.
But that was the interesting thing about it, is that actually it went kind of like that, and then it sort of ended, and then you all guys said, well, where are all the girls gone?
That's what it basically, because the tune went, the vibe's gone, and you're like, whoa, I've just created that big hype, and I've jumped around, and I've pushed around, and I'm like, raw, where are all the girls?
A very poignant point. Anyway, let's talk about the car routine, which was my favourite. I really, really enjoyed this car routine. In fact, I enjoyed it so much that they're going to do it for us. So, here we go.
You want to know what I think? I'll tell you what the fuck I think. Yo, blood, turn up that music and check this. Yo, you can't dance like me.
You can't dance like me.
Nah, your mum can't dance like me.
Nah, Lil Wayne can't dance like me.
Barack Obama can't dance like me.
Your mom can't dance like me.
But Pikachu can't dance like me.
Nah, Gordon Brown can't dance like me.
Beanie Man can't dance like...
But what are you on about, man? You can't say your mom can't dance like me.
What are you on about? You can't say my mom can't dance like me.
What do you mean, blood?
Nah, wrong, done. Wrong.
You know, that's like saying your mom can't dance like you, your granddad can't dance like you, your uncle can't dance like
but
you.
But shut him out.
Right, you can't say, man.
You can't say his mom can't dance like you, Dredd.
But louder.
The rules are set. Order. You'll listen to this?
Yo, I found X-Man's tune last night, you know, man, as soon as I got in. My man, shower.
Get to know, I downloaded X-Man last night, bro.
Yo, X-Man is the hottest thing in the UK right now. I fell asleep listening to his tune and dreamt I was fighting a dragon, blood. Yo, watch out!
Yo! What did I tell you, man? X-Man is shower blood. Did you hear what he said?
A man said, whoever took his phone is a dead man.
A dead man,
nah,
yo.
Nah. He said, whoever took his phone is a dead man. Don't know.
On live radio, blood.
Don't know.
Man is serious.
Man is more serious than JME multiplied by Maxwell Ranger.
Serious.
So what are you, man, saying, man? You down for this thing or what?
Lad, man, I ain't doing that.
You've been smoking Skittles. Didn't you hear what my man said?
Lad, I ain't doing that,
man. Me neither.
Yo, blood, you don't know remix. Yo, this is a big shot, man. Are you, man's really not going down for this thing?
Nah. I mean, come on, blood. I mean, we're good and all that, but it's like another level, you get me?
For real, you're not going for this thing?
Nah.
Really?
Of course we're going to do that, man. Are you stupid?
I knew it, man. Anyway, yeah. I'm working tonight, ain't it, at the bar, innit? So if you mans are going out, come down to the bar, innit? I'll slip you a few free drinks, innit?
Well, yeah. I got a date. I don't know, man. I'll see what I'm saying.
We'll be down still.
Yeah, man. Therefore, man, going to be there.
All right, then. Cool. Yo, fam. Bring your girl, innit? Or I'll be sick still.
Bring your girl?
I don't know, man. I'll see.
I wait there. I think I got the new thing. X-Man can't dance like me.
X-Man can't dance like me.
Nah, X-Man can't dance like me.
X-Man's mom can't dance like me. X-Man's mom can't dance like me.
Oh, well, amazing. Very, 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 very good. Look, how do you go about developing your work? I'm cracking up. How do you go about developing your work? How do you put it all together?
Well, like RT was saying before, yeah, the actual characters that you see on stage when you come to see 8-16-32 are very amplified versions of who we actually are. You get me? So we basically go through our experiences in day-to-day life. You get me? We put them all down. We made a story out of them. And then we added our creative juices, our lyrics, our flows, our beats, you know what I mean?
I want to come to you about, you're quite a conscious individual. How much of that is informing your work? You're conscious about what's happening around you in the world?
Yeah, can you rephrase that question, please?
I mean, you seem to be aware of, like, everything at the moment in terms of, like, politics, life, etc. How much of things that are actually happening today that affect people do you bring into your work?
Well, I try to bring as much awareness, not from the political side as such, but more about self-awareness. A lot of my work, if you were to actually study and look at it properly, you'll see that it's more about the self. And I think within the self contains the universal approach for everybody, because we're all going through the same experience at the end of the day, you know what I mean?
Okay. And tell us about the development of the work. What is the actual process? What do you all go into a room? Do you write stuff down or do you improvise? I mean, how's it actually done?
Well, what we actually do is go into the room and try and have as much fun as we possibly can. Brilliant. Whilst getting as much as we can done.
Yeah,
I think a lot of what's lost in theatre is the actual fun of how fun it is to actually tell a story.
And I totally agree with you. And I actually think if you actually look at the best directors in the world are the most, have huge humility, and they encourage individuals to play like school kids, because that's when you're at your most creative.
Exactly. Well, can I make the point? Well, first of all, you'd kill me if I didn't say this, but big up Leo K and Polar Bear.
And Leo K is your
director, yes.
And Polar Bear is
creative producer.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
But they're really, I think, because we've been working with them so long, and because we're all such individual and big characters as well, they've kind of developed this method of how to make us have as much fun as we can, but still get things done as well. And with any group, there's always going to be mad group dynamics, and there's going to be falling outs, and there's going to be happy times, but we get the best out of those situations and make them into something productive.
So what do you do? Do you improvise?
Yeah, it's mainly improvisation. It took us a long time to get to this professional level, but like, obviously this is a 4-year process, and when we started, we were very, very, very unruly kids.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, and that's fantastic, but you've got to give yourself phenomenal credit. The point I'm trying to make is that you may have been that 4 years ago. You're performers now. You've got a name. You're under the wing of Birmingham Rep. You opened the showcase for Decibel. You've got a tour happening next year. This is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to you guys. So you've got to take credit. It's come from somewhere. It's obviously come from you guys. Anyway.
I am definitely taking credit. But what I'm saying, it was all of those conflicts and that beautiful process of happiness, sadness, mm-hmm. anger, mm-hmm. and all the emotions that we went through that brought us to this level and made us who we are and what we are now, and having this close relationship that we have as a group.
Exactly what everybody else has said, basically. It's going into a room, having fun, and, you know, like,
and Polar being paid Bear, for it.
Yeah, no, that's the worst part about it. Is you'll have fun, and then you'll go, hold on, what did you just say? Yo, can't put that in the script. Like, what did you say? You are. All right, let's see if we can work with that. I'll guarantee that I'll make somebody laugh. You get me? Like, I'm going to be like, you don't get no girls,
though. That scene actually happened.
You don't get no girls, though. So when do the girls go, wait there, do you put that in?
Do you have limits? Are there barriers? Are there restrictions?
No limits. We used to diss each other to the ground. Do you know what I mean? We're more mature now, and we know where the limits are. But before, there was no limits.
But there's a beautiful show that came from No Limits, Get to Know.
You can't never limit yourself as an artist, man. And I think that's the problem with contemporary theatre.
That's what you get.
The moment
you
do, you're dead up, man. Simple.
All contemporary right. theatre follows the rules, man. Sometimes you have to break the rules. You have to step out of the box and take it back to where it came from. You get me?
So the question I want to throw to you is that, what happens if this didn't happen? Where would you be now?
That's a question that...
I think the beautiful thing about the group of people who I work with is that individually, I believe that each one of us would be able to achieve and aspire to everything that we want to do anyway as individuals. But collectively, what we can do together is so much bigger that it just makes sense just to be a unit, if you understand what I'm saying.
So the question I'm throwing to you is, if this didn't happen, what would you be doing?
What would I be doing? Boy, so I'd probably be doing this, but in a different situation.
In a different situation. But it wouldn't be a play. It wouldn't be a play as such. We'd be doing what you seen in the play.
Okay.
But only as individuals. In real life. Yeah.
And you don't know how you measure that success.
Like I said, we've channeled it into theatre and became the grime theatre pioneers.
Is that because you wanted to be successful?
We've always wanted to be successful. I mean, that, like RT said, we've always had the passion and the drive to try and get where we want to go. And this came about. So let's say if this wasn't here, we'd still be aspiring artists.
Because this is brilliant. We're talking about four lads from Birmingham, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So what about the rest of the talent in Birmingham? You know, because you said that you were in this room and there were loads of... They're doing their thing.
Okay.
Well, you know what, right? At the end of the day, what it comes down to is the overall law. Real, recognize real.
Mm-hmm.
You get me? If you're going to be the best at doing something, you're going to want to roll with the best. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, how I feel, when I first started out, I wanted to be, if not the best, at least one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And by me wanting that, by me desiring that, I would have met up with these guys anyway.
Anyway, it would have been a natural course.
It would have been a natural course.
Right, okay. Anyway. That's a very good answer. And I've heard that one before.
Yeah, I think the most amazing thing about the youth of today is that, like, they've got a lot of energy. And it doesn't matter whether they make beats, whether they're doing a theatre show, whether they're doing poetry. Whatever they do, they can transfer their energy into that.
But I think what's exciting about this particular group is that you're from Birmingham. This is great. So my question I'm asking you is that, what about the rest of the talent in Birmingham? What's happening to them?
Well, I think, personally, Birmingham, the talent is definitely there, and the talent has always been in Birmingham. Even you can go back, and there's artists that have been around that you probably won't even know about that are doing their thing. Young, because there is that frustration and that drive because they're not actually heard. And I think, like what Alcibi said, is that we're all together here to be successful. But the one thing that I wanted to be successful in is actually getting my voice heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now that I can get my voice heard, one of my responsibilities is actually to show that there's different routes and avenues for all the other artists in Birmingham for them to take.
And it's great because Birmingham Rep has taken you under their wings, and that's wonderful. That's incredibly positive. But surely it must be very, very difficult. I mean, not everyone can be like you four.
It's, do you know what? It comes down to having a professional mind as well, because you can throw another four MCs into the theatre and under the Birmingham Rep, but it's having that professional mind of, right, I'm here to do what I love and get paid for it.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're not just going to go in there and start jumping about the place saying, yeah, I want to write this and I want it to be like that. You have to be professional with it as well. And we've all got this professional business mind of artistry and wanting to be successful.
I suppose the point that I'm trying to make is that the support mechanism was put in place in order for you to make those journeys.
There is a support mechanism for all the talent in Birmingham, but it's just a matter of believing in yourself and not letting nobody really bring you down and taking any opportunity that comes to you. A lot of the MCs and the youths in Birmingham, they have loads of talent but don't necessarily know where to go. And one thing I can say about every member of this group is that we make things happen and we go everywhere that we possibly can to get ourselves heard and get our talent noticed, you know what I mean?
Okay, so well, let's talk about the festival. Okay, let's talk about the festival. You open the festival with a bang. Whoa!
Kaboom!
What was it like for you? I mean, we must have been daunting knowing that there's 400 delegates next door, and they're all just sort of like,
do you know what? Mm-hmm. As soon as we got to the theatre and seen the stage, we're like, right. Because we haven't had a stage above people, basically. So we was looking down on everybody. So just give us that sense of power.
Yeah.
And, yo, bring them in here. Let me show them one, two things. Because, boy, we couldn't wait.
Because normally they're above us, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's fantastic. And the outcome, has it been positive?
Wicked.
I feel so. The whole experience for me was a big eye-opener. I mean, we've done the show in so many different ways, but for some reason, this one was different for me. Personally, it was different for me because I felt like that I'd reached a level which was almost unattainable. You know what I mean? And
but you also, you got to look at the who was there. We're talking about, this is the British theatre industry. They're in a room with four guys, you know, doing their grind. A lot of people wouldn't have even known half of what you not half of
understood what you
said. No, not understood. I'm saying in terms of know what grime is. You know, they didn't know what the art form is. They're used to a different sort of art form, and you introduce that to them.
That's what I'm saying. We're teachers.
Well, get me. My personal highlight of actually doing the show at Decibel was, no disrespect to anyone that was there or anything like that, because a lot of them, you know what I'm saying, I met a lot of people after that, and there's a lot of blessed people there. But the actual storyline of the show, I think it would be hard for a lot of people to actually do what the people in the story was doing to us kind of situation, because they could easily be one of those execs in the story with, like, if you feel what I'm saying. So it was about actually, it was like a mirror, if you understand what I'm saying, and I'm happy that a lot of people could see the picture.
So do you think that this will take your collective to places that you didn't think?
It already has started doing that. Like, ever since this journey's began, our careers as artists have just been completely different to what it's normally perceived to be or normally what it is, do you know what I mean?
So tell us about the forthcoming tour then.
Well, I don't know too much at the moment, but it is
May.
Due for May.
Good feedback.
We've had very good response. We've had a lot of venues interested already and stuff like that. It's basically in its embryonic stages of putting it together and stuff like that. But it's very much there. And yeah, watch out for that May. And
so you feel that the Decibel Showcase was worthwhile doing in order to tell people about your work so they could book? Yeah?
Of course, because yeah, we've got a tour in May now. I mean, we've got a few dates set already. I mean, yeah, as RT said, it's still in its embryonic stage, so we don't know too much about it. But this tour is definitely coming. So Decipher Collective will be on tour in May. And I think we're set to do a few workshops out there as well.
Okay, and you're not going to tell us where about you're going to be going? Do you know?
We're still not yet to know. We just know.
And how will people get access to information about the Decipher Collective?
There's quite a few. There's the Birmingham rep, which will tell you a lot, or there's come to us individually via MySpace, Facebook, Twitter.
Okay, so let's do the Facebook, Twitter. Let's start with the professor.
Yeah, Professor D, myspace.com/trymyangle, facebook.com/trymyangle.
myspace.com/LCBinit or facebook.com/LeonLCB.
It was MySpace, this whole MySpace thing, and EVOK3. Yeah.
My MySpace is, you know what, yeah, to be honest, you can check it for dates and stuff like that, but I don't really respond to it because it's just madness. MySpace/RTDBTDB. But the Facebook, if you want to talk to me directly, is Joshua Artical Honus. So that real name, no gimmicks.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to find out actually what your real names are. So, Evoke, you are?
Sean Welch. Get to know this.
Yeah, if you want me on Facebook, it's Leon LCB Burke, but Leon Burke is the name.
Yeah, Auden Allen. But I'd like to say one more thing. My number is 07947. wait. My number is 07947271264. Feel free to call me.
What can you say to that? I mean,
and you know what? Other than the theatre stuff, we all do a lot as well. Like RT and Decipher, they've got an album together, Anomaly, their mixtape. I mean, my album comes out in March, which features all of these, Sunday School. I've also got a clothing line.
Yeah, which is quite remarkable. At the age of 20, to have a range of clothes. How did you manage to do that?
Do you know what? It started from, just, you know, I was seeing a lot of people wearing the same stuff and the same things, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to start putting stuff on my own stuff. So I printed my first T-shirt, and I was walking around, and people were like, yo, I like that, and I like that. I was like, all right, let me print you up one. Can I get one? So I printed up a few more, and I thought, you know, all right, that's my design. I'm going to do my own thing now. And then now Decipher and RT have got their Try My Angle T-shirts out, and I'm coming out with some new cut and sewn stuff as well, like blazers and trousers that I've already got underway with some hemp trousers, a nice little smart cash look as well. So, you know, that's the B-Fly range.
Okay, all right. Enough of the sell there, but...
Yep. Watch out for Try My Angle. That's the musical movement and angular arts workshop facilitation company.
Yeah, okay, before we go, has anyone else got anything to say?
Yeah, man. R.I.P. Michael Jackson.
And Patrick Swayze.
All right, okay. Look, it's been a huge pleasure talking to Professor T, Evoke, LCB, and RT, who are the Decipher Collective, and they have a wonderful future. And I hope Birmingham really looks after you, but I'm sure there's going to be wonderful opportunities in Birmingham to see their work.
I just want to give a big shout out to Ray Dean Carter. Yeah. Amanda Roberts.
You get everyone at the Birmingham Rep.
Everyone at the Birmingham Rep. Amanda Roberts and Raideen Carter. Yep.
Okay, this is Stephen Lucky for Theatre Voices. Bye bye.